Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. All right, this is episode 308. Thanks for coming back. So, first of all, in the news, I do need to mention that we had some things happen that are quite a bummer. So, last week started off with I got a message saying that the first 7 or 8 episodes of the show aren't on iTunes anymore. Well, it turns out iTunes says, hey, you can only have 300 episodes up on the iTunes listing. So that means as we publish every new episode, the oldest gets taken off. Now, the episodes are still out there and available via our Libsyn page, which is wcypodcast.libsyn.com. And you can go there, and it's also on our RSS page, and it's also on the blog. But it came to my attention, and I was curious. I put it to all of you and asked, should we then just leave it at 300 episodes, take every additional episode after 300, and start a new season? The only problem with that might be that now all of you will have to resubscribe to another podcast, you know, Whence Came You Season 2 or whatever we call it. And I don't want to leave everybody out in the dust, so I wanted to put it to you guys, and please discuss. We can do one of two options. We can create a secondary show, and you will have to resubscribe. And we do risk losing some listeners and supporters that way, because not everybody is going to automatically just go to the new show. It'll also cost a little bit more money each month if we do that, because then we have to pay for another show. But the other option is to just keep on publishing, and as the episodes disappear from iTunes, just know that if you want to listen to the older ones, just go to one of the other three sites where you can check those out. So that's number one. Number two is that we had an issue last week. I was recording on the Masonic Roundtable, and my computer decided that it was going to blow up. Not literally, but and the monitor went out, and it's technical machine that we use, it's like a one piece, right? So basically the media production came to a halt. I was able to fix it and get it back online, and I was recording this episode. I'm actually re-recording all of this right now because I lost my files. That computer decided to literally shut down, and it is stuck in an endless loop of restarts. I do have an appointment next week to have it looked at by a team of great computer technicians, hoping they can fix it. However, if it is not fixed, or if it is not fixable, or it is going to cost any amount of money, then we may end up producing. I've got the next two episodes after this one already recorded, or the content rather, and I think I can publish that over the next couple weeks. But after that, it may just be that 310 episodes. It's been a number of years. That computer was in service for about 7 or 8 years, actually. We got a lot of life out of it, and it served the podcast very well, but it may just come down to Whence Came You has 310 episodes, and that might be it. But the reason for that is it is almost $2,000 to replace that machine, and the podcast does not have that funding available. We do have bills to pay to bring all this to you. And as those payments go through, our balance, you know, dwindles. So we're always operating with only a couple hundred dollars, really. So depending on that situation, we'll find out. And if you guys follow us on Facebook, then I will let you know there what's happening. And rest assured that the show will, it'll stay online and always be available. However, just new episodes might not be coming out anymore. So we will find out what happens with that in the coming weeks. But for this week, we have a great talk with Frodero, and I have illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison, who stops by with the Masonic Minute, which is great because in 2 weeks, you're going to hear a great interview with brother Steve Harrison about his newest book, which is a Masonic Memoranda. And it's a fantastic read. He has some great stories that he's told in there. And again, that's in 2 weeks. We've got copies of the book for those brothers who sent in your questions. So we're excited to start sending those out. We'll announce those probably the episode where that interview takes place, toward the end of the episode. So when you hear it, I will then email you back and I'll let you know you won, and we'll get that address from you and we'll send those books out. Next week, we've got another great episode. I talked with Mike Jarzabek and award-winning author Bull Garlington about Star Wars and Freemasonry. It's going to be it was a fantastic conversation. I think you'll all enjoy it. And I think that's it for the news. I do want to remind you all, please go ahead and check out Brothers Blend Coffee at brothersblendcoffee.com. These guys have a great charity out there by Montgomery Lodge in Milford, Massachusetts. They do coffee, and it's for anybody who loves coffee. But again, it is a Masonic charity, essentially, and it helps to support those charitable causes, activities, and the maintenance of that lodge. So check them out. brothersblendcoffee.com. Before we jump into the conversation this week, I wanted to read a piece that was written by Worshipful Brother Gregory J. Knott. I think it's just an apropos piece for this week. So, without any delays, I'd like to go ahead and read this piece for you. Powerful Words by Senior Midnight Freemason Contributor, Worshipful Brother Gregory J. Knott. The Scottish Rite Creed. The cause of human progress is our cause, the enfranchisement of human thought our supreme wish, the freedom of human conscience our mission, and the guarantee of equal rights to all peoples everywhere, the end of our contention. Words have powerful meanings. Some of the most powerful words of Freemasonry for myself is the Scottish Rite Creed. When thought about deeply, these words encompass everything that Freemasonry should be about. Let me use this article to break down further and what I believe they mean. Quote, the cause of human progress is our cause. A cause, when defined as a noun by the dictionary, means a principle, aim, or movement that, because of a deep commitment, one is prepared to defend or advocate. As a Freemason, I can think of no higher calling than working towards the progress of all human beings. We have numerous opportunities to work toward this progress within our fraternity by building the individual man. We prepare him to enter back into the world a stronger, more committed individual capable of improving the people and places around him. These contributions move humanity forward in a positive direction. Quote, the enfranchisement of human thought is our supreme wish. Human beings are unique amongst all the Supreme Grand Architect's creation in that we have a capacity of intellectual thought. When sometimes enfranchised, it is set free or liberated and guaranteed. As Freemasons, we are builders. We are builders with our thoughts, with our actions, and with our deeds. A free mind has boundless capabilities, and when encouraged and nourished, will produce remarkable results that will have profound impact on the world around us. Quote, the freedom of human conscience, our mission. Knowing right from wrong is a foundational bedrock of civilized society. By liberating the human mind, we allow mankind to progress in our intellectual capacity in obtaining a deeper understanding of the world around us. The freedom of humans' conscience puts no limits on the ability of the individual to develop their own beliefs in areas such as religion and politics. As Freemasons, we place a priority on the individual to develop to the very best of their ability and contribute in positive manner to society and mankind. Quote, and the guarantee of equal rights to all peoples everywhere, the end of our contention. Oppression is still present throughout the world, and the forces of darkness seek to limit the freedom of the individual. Freemasonry builds men to improve themselves as individuals. In turn, we are to be exemplars in society, helping to build and improve the world around us. Does Freemasonry live up to these lofty ideals? My answer is yes. Do individual Freemasons fall short? Yes, we do. We work towards the perfection of the individual, knowing that achieving such may be impossible. Collectively, we put forth our efforts together to make a difference in our families, nation, and world. There has never been a time in human history when the ideals of Freemasonry are needed more. Let us resolve to continue our work of self-improvement and thereby having a positive impact on the world around us. Gregory J. Knott. Well, Greg, I think you really nailed it on that one, and I think very appropriate for this week. I hope we all listen to that and get a little bit inspired. So thanks again. Now let's go right into this week's conversation. All right, everybody, we're back with Frauder O, and it's been a little spell. I do apologize for that. Schedules have been a little crazy, but we're back, and welcome to the show, Frauder.
Thanks for having me back. It's been a joy to listen to a lot of the episodes. You've had a lot of great podcasts.
Thanks very much. So this week, we're going to talk about something that we've both been asked questions regarding, kind of like greatness and what constitutes that, what makes that happen and that kind of thing. So when we talk about this question, and this is what we'll lead with, is what is greatness? And I think we'll pass it over to Frauder O for some initial thoughts.
You hear that term a lot thrown around by a lot of the Masonic videos. I'm sure those Masons that are listening, they can always credit the Benjamin Franklin. There's greatness within inside of you and you can unlock it. But if you read any of, you know, John Robinson's books, Born in Blood, which is a very famous book, and The Pilgrim's Path, there's a quote in one of those two books that is just, quote, life is just good ritual, unquote. And if you get into like the self-help areas with like Tony Robbins, it's just always about daily rituals. And, you know, the Masonic ritual is kind of a rule and a guide, or some people will say monitor or roadmap or escape map or escape plan that Brother Greg Kavinsky has used many times on how to achieve this greatness. And there's been many Masons beforehand throughout history, regardless if they've shaped countries, if they shaped nations, if they've shaped military commands, they've shaped corporations, they've shaped policy, they've shaped education. Throughout all aspects of life, you'll find usually there's a Mason. Not all the time, but majority throughout history, especially through the revolutions, always standing for the greater good, and there always have been Masons. So how do you unlock these tools within you?
Leading from that, we're thinking already of like unlocking this power. So the first thing we kind of think of is, you know, this is a Frauder O and RJ segment, so of course, esoterically, we kind of look at things in a weird way. Maybe these ideas of positive and negative thoughts and how they affect us. There are these studies that have been done regarding the effects of a positive mindset versus the effects of a negative mindset. And overwhelmingly, the positive mindset is more successful in almost all areas. We think of that a little bit, and I just wonder, you know, this kind of ties into the idea of the secret or the law of attraction, this idea that we are constantly utilizing the human's ability to be optimistic about many things, and somehow this affects the reality in which we live. There is this kind of psychological thought that perhaps what's happening is not necessarily a good thing, or good things aren't really happening to you, you're just seeing them as good things. But in almost all instances that I have witnessed, I have been a part of, the things I've read, these are not things where you're just going to declare the success of your abilities. So the success of these things we look at, and if you think it's just psychological or the way somebody looks at something, it's kind of a flawed viewpoint. The major examples of some of these things aren't always monetary. They actually are life-saving. There is the case of the gentleman who was never supposed to walk again after being in a plane crash, and he walked out by Christmas because of the power of his mind, the positivity, the power of suggestion, or law of attraction, if you will. And some of that tends to be brought about by a way of thinking and an acknowledgement. And I'll probably go into that maybe a little bit later in the program. But Frauder, what do you tend to think of success when we talk about it and maybe the generalized esoteric property of positive and negative forces of your mind?
Yeah, before I jump into duality, that's a great question. Do you mind if I kind of piggyback off of what you talked about there?
Not at all.
So spontaneous, remission is a very unique topic. And it's a topic, personally, I've been, I've researched over the past 2 years of overcoming some pretty serious injuries. And during that journey, there's an interesting person, and he's not a Mason, but if you're into the whole quantum physics and area, you really can tend to go down a rabbit hole. And there's one MD in particular, Dr. Joe, I'm going to butcher his last name, Zoza. He was in the documentary What the Bleep, but he writes extensively on spontaneous remission, from cancers to people actually growing teeth, or people like crazy, crazy, crazy situations where people have 3 weeks to live, some serious kidney failure, and, you know, be coming back to life. And they all believe it all comes down to the power of the mind and, you know, focusing on controlling that mind. And, you know, digressing back to duality, duality is consistently found everywhere. And, you know, you mentioned it in particular with the hemispheres, but that can be, you know, the whole ideology if you get into really serious occult studies of as above, so below. Well, I think that could be quite many different levels of the microcosm versus the macrocosm, right? So what you literally have going on internally inside of you is projecting this massive play of life. You know, many times we've talked about Plato's allegory of the cave many times on the show, and I know you guys have covered it before too on the TMR, but you know, polarity, good and evil, positive and negative, day and night, yin or yang, anar and soft, ha or thought, sun or moon, pick your allegory, pick your system, that duality is always present. Yeah, but that duality comes back to the mind, but more the hidden, the super, some sort of variation of superficial ideologies. So
if I could interject, and first of all, just validate what you just said, I completely agree with. But also, when we think about the human mind as this, really, it's an amazing construct. Some people might say, oh, how inferior it would be to have this negative and positive kind of thing. Like, wouldn't you just want one solid thing? The reality really is that by having the dualism, you have this better ability even. You have all of a sudden now a choice, and it is such a far superior system. And by having that action, or by having this ability to make a choice, you now have a possibility to create a cast of peoples who choose to operate certain ways. And I think, you know, the deep teachings of Freemasonry and many other schools tend to end in the same places, where we use the duality to figure the best and worst of things and try to decipher what is good, what is bad, and generally, you know, move society in a more positive direction. But we talk about this esoteric idea, but then, you know, we've also talked about diet and things, of course, on the show. And that brings us into, I think, the mind scientifically. And we talk about, it's well known, right? Like, how do you blend the science with the esoteric, the science or the facts with the philosophical? And one of the things we see is that the science tends to back up the philosophical, really, when we really do the research. Examples include, you know, this idea of spiritual alchemy. And in real life, you know, we have chemicals that are produced for balance within our systems. They are produced by our glands, and the glands are tied to chakras, if you will. And our bodies have the ability of ingestion and consumption. And depending on what we feed them, our minds and our glands produce certain chemicals. And those chemicals then induce your brain or your power of your mind to function at its most optimum levels. And I know we've talked about this in the past, Rotter, but perhaps you can give a little bit of a rundown on what it means to, in certain cultures and in certain ways that we eat, like specifically, you know, I know you've talked about kind of you are what you eat, in a sense of absorbing the consciousness of what we're eating.
Absolutely. So just to piggyback again off of the polarity aspect, like Masons listening to the show, just go back and think about when you were first made an entered apprentice Mason, before you even walked into the lodge, how were you clothed? Just think about what was where, how was what, and stop and think, like, what's unique? And then think about the second degree, what's different there, right? And then you were taught on each of those 2 degrees a certain password. And what is the name of that password, and what does that represent, right? Or the due guard or the sign, what does that represent? And so just stop and think about that and meditate on that. And then if you forget, go to lodge and watch again. Then you'll start to see a shocking correlation between what we're talking about and maybe those two things. Masonry wrote some really good books. C.W. Leadbeater happened to be also a theosophist. He wrote some great books on Masonry, but one in particular on Expertia Alchemy, and then Diet and Vegetation. And a lot of, we're probably going to get a lot of hate mail from this, but you know, personally speaking, I'm on a plant-based diet. Leadbeater wrote a really interesting book we've mentioned in the show in the past on vegetarianism and the occult and the significance of eating plants and the significance of nutrition and feeding glands and repairing glands that pertain to chakras. And these glands are vital functions, and they're harmony, right? So we have these seven glands that are producing energy, and they're producing chemicals, and they're also producing frequencies as well. They're a vibration. Everything's a vibration. And when there's a discord in that harmonious system, usually there's a, you know, it creates a domino effect throughout the whole system as well. And how important eating clean and eating healthy is, you know, to have yourself run optimally. It's like the same ideology. You know, if you're getting in a fighter jet, you're not going to take pump gas and put it in a fighter jet, right? That fighter jet's made to run at optimum speeds and high altitude and temperatures and burn very, very fast ethanol. You're not going to put really, really cheap grade gasoline into it. Well, it's the same thing with your body. You have this amazing vehicle to experience this world. You really don't want to get bogged down by all these chemicals. And you can read plenty of books that are out there that talk about toxins in food or biotoxins or even lack of nutrition and all these man-made chemicals that take their effect and take their toll on the gland system or on the stomach. So the importance of eating clean is very important. But you know, do note that many mystic schools always, regardless if it's been ancient Rosicrucianism or even the Pythagoreans, they all went on vegan plant-based diets. And, you know, it's interesting if you read in many books that talk about Pythagoreans, yeah, they would start progress. They would take a vow of silence for 5 years, right, to learn to quiet the mind. They would go first on a plant-based diet, and then they would, after they would eat, you know, all vegetables, then they would only graduate to eat plants grown by the sun, because they worship the sun. And then from there, then they would graduate over time to actually giving up plants, giving up foods. We've talked about this on the show in the past about sun gazing. And then they graduate from giving up food once they've repaired all the damage they've done to actually legitimately living off of the sun's rays. Yeah, I know it sounds crazy. I know you don't believe me. I didn't believe it at first, but there's been documentaries done. There's been plenty of books that have been written from the 1400s up to the present day on people from all different walks of life that do it. And there's been people currently living at this time period that are living off the sun's rays. And it's a dangerous thing. It's not meant for everyone. If you're thinking about going out tomorrow and doing it, I advise not to by any means. That's one of those slow things like riding a bike. You have to work yourself up. And it's an important thing. And you know, many religions always have that solar allegory, right? The solar man. So it's pretty fascinating. That's a big tangent there. But RJ, do you have anything that, you know, with diet and nutrition that I've kind of gone off there on sun gazing, but to bring it back to health?
When we talk about like health, I don't eat a lot of meat, but I still do. So that said, I always feel a lot better when I'm eating. I don't order 72-ounce steaks. I could just never do that. I literally feel ill after eating certain types of meat. I think that's just a product of like how my body works with foods and the genetic predisposition based on geography, where my lineage comes from, and the available foods there. I tend to handle those kinds of foods better. But looking at certain things, you know, we talked about the dangers of going into some of those zones, you know, like the sun gazing type. And so it is always important that you are getting your health professional's say in anything you're doing. Ultimately, you're trying to optimize your human condition. So the physical, you're optimizing the machine. This is kind of part of the ability to, if you're optimizing the machine, your body is producing the proper chemicals that it needs to process things in an elevated mode. And when we look at that, it's really important to kind of understand how certain things affect us, right? I kind of joke about what I call the alchemical cup, ... of coffee. And what I mean by that is literally, if you look at how caffeine really affects, you know, people tend to drink caffeine or they drink coffee when they are feeling tired. Well, at that point, it's really not going to do anything for you. It's just going to stop you from getting more tired. Caffeine staves off the ability to get tired, not to take you from being tired. So what if I told you the key to making coffee work would be to, like, you know, slam a chocolate bar and then wash it down with a coffee 5 minutes later, because now you're on a sugar high. And once you get on the sugar high, now you've added the caffeine, and now you're going to ride that sugar high for as however long the caffeine stays active in your system. So when we think about how certain foods really affect us, it's important to know what they're doing to your body when they hit your bloodstream and they start working. So you should read about that stuff. Know your body, right? Like, it doesn't really come with a user's manual unless you become a medical doctor. And not everybody has those kinds of funds. But it should be fairly simple to, you know what your body needs. Stay hydrated, all these kind of things. And beware, I do want to also say that there is a logical fallacy out there, and it's called appeal to nature fallacy. And this is the idea that you can basically sell a product because you say it's all natural, it's homeopathic. And that, while that may be fine, you do need to understand what those things are doing for you, either by extensive study on your own grounds or by consulting with your health professional. And I say your health professional because some people have, they use medicine doctors, some people have medical doctors, some people see shamans. Whatever your practice is, make sure that you're consulting with them so that they know, so that they have your best health and interest. But, you know, in this science aspect, again, optimization and continued movement in a direction toward whatever system you're choosing to try and use in order to optimize your being. Because again, we're just these meat suits, and our consciousness is inside them, like, you know, a mech warrior or whatever you want to call it. But our consciousness is seated somewhere within us, and we are basically this entity that is experiencing our reality through the construct of this fleshy meat suit, and it is just that way. Don't put crap fuel in your body, and it's just that simple.
You mentioned about coffee, right? So we're talking about chemical reactions. So people think caffeine and sugar gives you energy. I hate to break it to you, it doesn't give you energy. Your body produces the energy. All it does is press a button on one of the endocrine systems. So case in point, coffee, caffeine. I hate to break it to you guys, all it's doing is pressing the button on your adrenaline glands every time.
Right.
And you can only press that button so many times. That's why it takes 2 cups or 3 cups or 4 cups now for you to get going, is because you keep pressing that button. I mean, the great thing about the body is we have these trillions of cells, or these workmen inside of us, or these craftsmen, or whatever you want to call it, that are inside of us working. You can rebuild it through diet, through supplementation, through meditation, through multiple aspects. And we're not health professionals. We're not telling you what to do here, but you can find plenty of information online on how to be able to do that. So it's interesting. We're talking about chemical reactions, and you use a great analogy there. And it's case in point. You know, your body's producing everything you really need.
Absolutely. So when we look at these things, and so how this affects everything. So this is your experience in the world. And now let's just say you started with some interesting teachings. And where do you go? We alluded to earlier that there are different paths to get to where you're going. Now, we've got Masons who listen to the show. We've got profane that listen to the show. I've got Lady Masons and co-Masons and regular Masons, and that's all well and good. But we've also got, you know, folks who are Golden Dawn or Ordo Templi Orientis, or, you know, Rosicrucian orders. So, you know, we've got all kinds of folks who listen to this show. And it's important to understand and recognize that there is more than one teaching to get us to this idealized state of greatness, this greatness that lies within, or this greatness that you can become. And so there is a path that has worked for, like, you know, in Masonry, this is just a path that has worked for a set of individuals whose mind and body work in a particular discipline. And it's important to recognize that, again, Masonry is not the only one. You have to find, like, a discipline that tends to work for you, and ultimately understand that the goal, the top of the mountain, isn't the prize. The prize is the experience along the way. There was a video that we posted online not too long ago of a rabbi who was kind of telling the story of a man climbing a mountain. And his friend comes up and he says, "Oh, you're climbing the mountain? Hop on. I'll get you up there in 3 minutes." And the guy says, "No, thanks. I'll get there in my own time." And he's acknowledging of the struggle of the journey, which is one of the key reasons a person grows, is this idea of discomfort, the idea that you have to try. You can't just take the easy way, because by taking the easy way, you're actually not bettering yourself in any, you know, intrinsic way. So the journey is important, and it's a task where the finish line lets you know that you did what you had to do for the quest. That's how you know, you get to this finish line, you cross it, and that's how you know you did the steps. It's not that by crossing the finish line, you now understand. It's not, if you want to look at it in a Matrix standpoint, Neo gets to upload a program into his brain and he knows Kung Fu in, you know, 5 seconds. All of a sudden, that was the goal, right? Which is an interesting way to look at it. But I mean, if you look at the journey he took to get to that point, that is what enabled him to get there and to do that. So we need to make sure we're paying attention to the journey. Frotter, what are your thoughts on this?
You're talking about, you know, the journey aspect. You just can't help to overlook, or, you know, the whole idea of the apron and the significance of the white apron. And that's pretty powerful. Same thing with the Pythagoreans. They were given white robes and they were told to go out in the world in white robes, or a craftsman would have white aprons, but over time they would get dirty because they would be doing work. And there's always work to be done. There's always constant room for improvement consistently, regardless of how successful you are as a family or as a father or a business professional or as a friend. There's always internal growth to be had. And if you're saying, you're shaking your head, then, you know, I hate to break it to you, your ego has it trapped. Because as long as you're still in a physical body, there's always work to be done consistently. Grand Lodge of Masons in California put out an absolutely wonderful 2-minute promotional video. And I'm going to paraphrase a quote that came out of there, but, you know, when you were brought into this world, you were crying when you were brought into this world. But when you leave this world, have people cry and rejoice of what you've accomplished in life. And that's powerful. That's strong. And, you know, at the end of the day, when you get into the degrees, you get back into masonry, all the teachings you really need are right there. They've always been directly inside of you. You just have to awaken them or believe you can come. You can find it. A case in point, after you took your oath, you took your obligation, right? What were you told? There's like two different things. You know, arise and follow your conductor and fear no danger. You really think about who your conductor is, and if you get into meditation and you understand what the ego is and the subconscious, you'll find some shocking correlations. Some deep, deep stuff. What's your thoughts on that, RJ?
So I feel like through our journey, we do necessarily find that the secret to greatness is within you. I mean, it really is within every person. And it's the way we go about the teachings of our system that allows us to access and to maintain the greatness. We have it as maintaining this is a constant mindset of happiness, right? This constant idea that you have to keep accomplishing and to keep moving forward. There's a line, again, in a ritual that we say, you know, we talk about the industriousness of Masons, that those of us among us who are not industrious, who don't contribute to the common stock of humanity, are to be deemed drones and useless members of society and unworthy of our protection as Masons. And I think when taken in the proper context, we need to look at that and we say, well, that's who we are charged to be. We are charged to be great individuals, and to look at kind of this duality. Again, bringing it back to kind of this idea of this happiness is a mindset that essentially, you know, heaven and hell really exist in your mind, and you have to find this equilibrium between the two of them. You make these choices. I've said it before, you know, regarding success, is that there are not work-life balances, or there is not work-life balance. There's work and life choices. And there are consequences for making those choices. And hopefully through the twofold thing of proper body, you know, taking care of your body the proper way, and which then facilitates the mind and cultivates things. And by learning and studying and meditating on, you know, we'll tie this into masonry because that is what we do. Studying on those degrees really should open your mind to a lot of these aspects, especially the way you talked about the apron and how over time it gets dirty. I think that's really key. And if you pick up on that, great. But what happens when we get to this point? Like, how do you know? And there are certain keys, I think. For me, I've always thought, as far as when I'm in the zone, you know, people talk about being in the zone or whatever, like they're at an optimization that is rivaled by no other instances that has happened within their lives. And I've had several experiences like this. And the best way I can describe it is kind of where your mind needs to be above, we'll call it an arc, but between two points. So the acknowledgement of this mind placement is okay, but you have to mask your conscious mind from thinking about it, because then you tend to push the point outside the outer boundary. And likewise, to forget where you should be operating puts you under the threshold. So it takes away from your image powers of like personal manifestation of matter, cause and effect, your intrinsic ability to affect the reality around you. And it sounds really coded in what I'm saying, but it's really the best way I can describe it. I'm not speaking in any kind of code. Like, this is how I see it. You know, making every green light on your way to work in the morning, or it could be winning a battle. When you're in this zone, optimized version of yourself, where you are the person perceiving and experiencing through the human, and your mind is in an elevated state where you recognize the power you have at the moment, but in that same respect, we're looking at almost not acknowledging it. Like, you have to mask that from your conscious mind, because by acknowledging it, it pushes you out of it, because now all of a sudden ego has stepped in, but not acknowledging it also takes you off the track. So it's something that you have to keep, like, you have to learn how to use your subconscious mind a bit. And I feel like greatness within the human is fully attainable by anybody. And I feel like, you know, examples of these kind of people are all around us. You know, we look at guys like Einstein. We look at guys like, you know, old generals, MacArthur, famous men in the founding of our country, men like Washington and Ben Franklin and all these kind of cats. And it's fantastic to think about them, but also, like, where are these guys today? And we can really look at many of the scientific discoveries of the early 20th century, where we had a lot of Masons behind a lot of that stuff, which was amazing. But, like, even today, you're starting to see celebrities, great celebrities and politicians, and, you know, anybody who's making changes in the world, there are these points in their careers where maybe they were caught with a ring on, or maybe they were caught with a hat on, or maybe something, or rather, you know, during in their career where they have been caught, like, kind of by the Masonic crowd. Most people wouldn't recognize some things, but they're kind of caught up in the Masonic crowd. And you think, it's one of these things where it's kind of interesting, because where it was once like a popular thing to be a Mason or a Shriner or whatever, it's largely gone underground. Now it's not so, you know, hip in Hollywood to say you're a Mason, which I think is interesting, but maybe a topic for another episode. But you tend to catch these guys up and you wonder about their greatness. You can't help but wonder if they're in that position or if they have that mindset, because they're able to tap into this. And even non-Masons, these great men in history who have done so much, you know, they said great things about the power of mind, Andrew Carnegie being one of them. I'm sure there's going to be a guy out there who writes to me and say Carnegie instead of Carnegie. Sorry. But the mind is really the key to everything. It's the way you look at things, the way you do things, and the ability for you to continually maintain your body and the mechanism of the mind in its optimized state. How about you? Thoughts on this?
It's always amazing when you look at these people throughout history that have walked and achieved so much in their life. And if we even just look at our founding fathers or past presidents or Masons, I mean, you just look at their life, and they've accomplished so much. And then you take a hard look in the mirror and look at your life and like, man, I haven't even scratched the surface yet. But the great thing is, it's up to you. You can change that at any point in time. And the wonderful thing about Masonry is you can go back to those teachings, because those same brothers, those same people, you usually were Masons, achieve that by applying the working tools, or actually applying the teachings, which seems to be missed in the present day. And what do I mean by applying the teachings? Well, then go back to the first degree and go sit back and learn. Pay attention. Don't go in your head. Be present, because those same footsteps you walk, same footsteps that candidate's walking that you're going to watch. Or if you're not a Mason, those footsteps you're going to walk real soon, those same footsteps and the ritual that you're going to go through. A lot of successful and a lot of famous people When I say famous, people that have shaped the world, I'm not talking about celebrities here. I'm talking about people that have changed policy and have changed the greater good, humanity for the better. From Galileo to Pythagoras to, you name it, Franklin, Washington, Roosevelt, they've made some serious marks on the world. That's powerful. So it ultimately comes down to you.
And I think that is where I would like to leave it. And as Frater Rose said, replay that in your head. Replay that last bit of what he said. And think about that before you go to bed at night, when you wake up in the morning, before you do anything. Say those words to yourself, because that is ultimately the truth of everything, really. And so I hope you all enjoyed the episode. I hope you gleaned a little something out of this. I hope we were able to help you manifest your plan to enact this somehow in your life. Make yourself great. So Frater Rose, thanks again for being on the program. I know our schedules had some conflicts, but I really do appreciate you taking the time out to come back on the program.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always a joy to catch up with a good friend and being able to be a beacon of light. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I really hope you guys enjoyed that fantastic conversation. It is always a pleasure to have Frater O on the program. Now, let's go right into this week's Masonic Minute.
Have you ever seen anything like this? I know I've seen it often. A candidate enters the lodge room to receive his fellow craft or Master Mason degree. Then each, the senior deacon leads the candidate around the room, stopping at stations for an interrogation. The officers at those stations ask if the candidate has made suitable proficiency in the preceding degree. "He has," replies the senior deacon, as he shakes his head no. Muffled snickering from around the room usually follows. You see, about 15 years ago, my jurisdiction, Missouri, dropped the requirement for proficiencies. Many of our brothers considered that decision to be the worst thing that had happened in our state since the Pony Express went belly up. And it's not exactly breaking news that the debate continues. Those senior deacons aren't shaking their heads for nothing. I recall receiving the pamphlet with the proficiencies when I became an entered apprentice. Yes, in Missouri, they're written down in code, but still a practice that some consider heresy. Discovering I had to memorize the material gave the word daunting new meaning. Somehow, though, I manned up and learned them for all three degrees. Having gone through the experience, I consider it one of the highlights of my Masonic journey. I spent time with my mentor, who not only took me through the rote memorization process, but also explained things along the way. At the end, I felt a great sense of accomplishment. I also found all that memory work paved the way for learning other parts in the future. Frankly, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I'm still not sure, however, where I fall in the debate we're still having 15 years after the proficiencies went away. I think there is a feeling that the lack of proficiencies increases membership. Or maybe a better way of putting that is having proficiencies might scare some men away. I have to say, in all those years we haven't had them, I've seen men come through who are some of the finest brothers I know. We wouldn't want to do without them. But would they have joined anyway? In the end, I probably fall somewhere in the middle of the road. I really think it should take more of a commitment to join the fraternity than it does, say, to become a member of your local public TV station. We should require new brothers to demonstrate at least a knowledge of signs, passwords, and maybe even learn the obligation. Going through some old Missouri records recently, I noticed one more interesting fact to consider. Historically, there were a lot of brothers who were initiated cast, and raised in a matter of days. Sometimes, in fact, on the same day. Meriwether Lewis, for example, was initiated on January 28, 1797, and received his second and third degrees on the following evening. Obviously, he did not learn, quote, suitable proficiencies in that time span. Lewis and many others who came into the fraternity that way served the craft well. Don't we become a little more proficient in Freemasonry every day, with every meeting, every experience? Perhaps we should look at proficiency as something other than memorizing a boatload of materials. To me, understanding that material is proficiency, and it doesn't come overnight. I wonder what would happen the next time I'm asked if the candidate has obtained suitable proficiency, if I responded, define proficiency. You're right, maybe not a good idea. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
Another fantastic piece with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison. You know, guys, it's kind of interesting. You might not realize, but this is the 60th episode of the Masonic Minute. How crazy is that? It's been 60 segments. The amount of time required to put these together is unbelievable. So a huge thanks goes out to brother Steve for your hard work and your dedication, and really cannot thank you enough for the contributions to the program every week, every month. It's just awesome. So thank you so much for that. And with that, guys, that's it for this week. I'm going to try and produce these last two episodes and get them out and up for you. I say last, they might not be the last. They are the last for now. We have to figure out what's going on with the production computer, and I'll let you all know what happens with that as we get news about it. So I'll let you all know when I know. In any case, until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Be sure to join us for our next edition.